listener. You're listening to Darling Shine, a podcast by myself, Elodie Pullen.
And me, Chloe Fisher.
A place where we ground womanhood's unspoken experiences from grief to fertility and everything in between.
Join us while we transform our pain into power, encompassing all emotions, ugly and beautiful. Darling Shine is your chosen family and your survival kit for the unexpected shit life throws at you.
I actually don't know how I came across you, but I think it was just somewhere on social media and became aware of your story. And I was on a plane traveling, I think, from Sydney to Gold Coast a few months ago. And I was like, I need to know more. I know that sounds so bad, but I was like, I need to know more about this girl. She's like such a beautiful family and like, you know, these tragedies has happened to you. And I was so like interested to know more. And I listened to your podcast that you had just brought out. And so for those who don't know, I actually mentioned Kelly Finlayson in our, I think it was our first episode of the year, where I was saying I listened to this podcast and this story and I was so inspired by you and how strong you are. And Kelly actually was 25 years old when she was found out she had stage 4, and correct me if I'm wrong, bowel cancer, just after you had given birth to your first child.
Yeah, so she was 3 months old when I was diagnosed, yeah.
Yeah, and it just honestly broke my heart, the whole story, and I think you was just so, so unbelievably strong, and I loved how you shared your story, your highs and your lows and everything that comes with it, and it's very much what we do here at Darling Shine as well. And so I thought immediately, I was like, we need to get Kelly on the podcast to share your journey and also create some awareness around bowel cancer too, because it's, I mean, like all of these topics that we speak about, not many people openly speak about their journeys. So, I mean, you're still a baby. You're not even 30 yet, right?
Yeah, no, I'm 28 at the moment. Yeah, 30 next year.
You've just gone through the ringer. But thank you so much for coming on the podcast. We're really excited to have you here.
No, I'm really excited to be on. And I think, I guess it's important to realise the point of difference, I guess, that I have to most people that would talk about cancer, particularly. Normally you have someone speaking about like a partner that's passed away or someone that they've lost or someone that's a survivor. And while I'm, I guess, surviving or thriving, you could say, I am still very much in the like depths of it. So I think that's my point of difference when I'm speaking about it. It's not speaking about someone that I know or someone that's survived. It's like quite literally my life still.
Wow. And Kelly, can you take us back to, you know, when you had your beautiful baby Sophia, mm-hmm. and you're in like the amazing newborn bubble with your partner, and you probably just think like life couldn't get better. What then happened, like, and how was it so that you went to the doctor and found this out? Like, can you just talk us through that?
Yeah, so obviously your life turns upside down for the best reasons when you have a baby. Like, it's the most magical time, and we were very much in a love bubble, and everything was just going as we'd planned, which was too good to be true at the end of the day. But my partner actually made a joke about needing to go to the toilet all the time and offering to hire a portaloo for our road trips that we were going on regularly, because we had a little baby girl that needed to sleep and she slept the best in the car. So yeah, he made a joke about it. I thought it wasn't funny, and he said, "We'll go see a doctor if you don't want me to make the jokes anymore." And I was like, oh, that seems like an adult thing to do. But yeah, I did it, and the doctor was very concerned that I hadn't been seen prior, because she got me into a specialist within a week. So yeah.
So the cancer was in your bowel and it was like everywhere?
Yeah. So essentially, obviously I didn't know the extent of it until I'd had the surgery and all the scans and whatnot within 2 weeks of being diagnosed. But essentially I'd given birth to what's a 10 centimetre diameter head past an 8 centimetre diameter tumour in my bowel. So like already that's traumatic, but I just thought it was normal because childbirth's hard. And then, yeah, once they removed the tumour, they were like, girl, no wonder you had so many issues. But, yeah, obviously the extent of it's not found until you get the surgery and all the tests.
I just wanted to rewind a little bit, because I know that in your podcast you were saying that you kind of suspected that there was something wrong before you gave birth to your baby and you went and saw doctors and you went and got these referrals and you decided to postpone the investigation. Can you talk me through that?
So I didn't actually get to postpone it. COVID postponed my colonoscopy, which it was an elective procedure at that point because I had no family history or any real telltales that there was something really wrong. But obviously there was something wrong enough for them to book me for a colonoscopy originally. So that got postponed the first week of Melbourne's lockdown in 2020. And then once it got rebooked, I guess, I was already pregnant. So I wasn't going to have this procedure not under an anaesthetic, let alone have any reason for my pregnancy to be disrupted. So I just put it off until obviously I had issues again. So, yeah.
Was there any way that you could have pushed for that? Or do you think that if you were to do something back then, you'd be in a different position today?
Yeah, so I probably would have had a polyp removed and I wouldn't have even had cancer, let alone stage 4 cancer. So in hindsight, obviously hindsight's a beautiful thing and we'd all love to live knowing what the future's got to hold. But when they postponed it, I was like, well, there's probably someone dying that needs this doctor more than I do. And I was at the time 23-year-old naive young girl that didn't even know what cancer was. And it never crossed my mind that that could be a possibility. I thought I had an intolerance or a irritable bowel or something like that. That's quite simple to fix in comparison to cancer. Like, it's still a shitty thing to have, but it's not cancer. Yeah.
Wow. And hey, this could be just a really stupid thing to say, but it just made me think, I wonder if some people, when they're pregnant and they have cancer, can the baby get the cancer? Like, can it spread to the baby, or is that just so stupid?
Well, I was really concerned about that too, but I don't have Lynch syndrome, which is, I guess, the genetic factor that it would like go down the line to.
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't really have that worry now that I've been genetically tested. Thank God, because that was the first thing I thought of. And this girl's going to have colonoscopies from the age of 16 because it's 10 years prior to when my first one was. So, yeah.
And, like, so when they were scanning and you're pregnant and they're scanning and they can see the baby and there was this, like, 8-centimetre tumour growing right next to her.
They didn't pick anything up. They didn't pick anything up. There was never mention of anything while I was pregnant. And you would think that I would have been like, you would think that it would show because I had so many ultrasounds. I had a pretty difficult pregnancy, like, obviously we know why now, but at the time we didn't know why. And there was just so much pressure in my hips. I had like the varicose veins and stuff in the inner thigh of my legs because there was veins being blocked because there was so much pressure there. But we just thought it was a big baby because I have a 6'5" husband, so like that would also make sense that I just had a big baby. But yeah, it's weird that with all the testing, like I had so many ultrasounds, so many more than what's normal, and nothing was seen or nothing was brought up to me anyway.
You saying that your life would be different now knowing this then, does it make you so frustrated? Like, how do you like just move forward and how do you just accept, how do you accept that that has happened?
It is so frustrating knowing that I could have essentially had a polyp removed, which is essentially a tiny flap of skin that's removed and that's what becomes cancerous, or a stage 1 diagnosis, which is just the removal of that part of the bowel or whatever. Anyway, anything is better than stage 4 essentially.
Yeah.
But also in the same breath, if I had have had that colonoscopy, I probably wouldn't have got pregnant that year and I wouldn't have Sophia. So like you've got to weigh up the part that some people get these diagnoses, whatever, I don't know how to say it, prior to ever having the pregnancy and then never get the biological children. Like, I guess in one sense, I'm lucky that I was able to have a whole pregnancy, like to term, which is insane considering what was going on with my health, and have a healthy baby and a really, really good pregnancy essentially, and birth and whatnot. Like, I had a natural vaginal birth, which some people don't even get to do that. So I guess, yes, I hold a little bit of resentment for the doctors that cancelled my colonoscopy, but at the same time they gave me the ability to, I guess, not worry about my health because I didn't think it was as bad as it was. So then let myself fall pregnant and have this little beautiful little girl now.
Does it affect your fertility?
Yeah. So I'm completely infertile now. I've gone through menopause already, which is something in itself, like, bizarre.
Have you? So you know, the Portaloo joke happened, you took yourself to the doctor, you had the surgery, you've got a beautiful 4 or 5 month old baby, and then did you find out, okay, now you're not able to have any more kids?
No. So before I even had my first surgery, which my first surgery was a stoma, so it had not like no impact on anything really. It was just like a diversion of my stool so that I wasn't having to try and go to the toilet past the tumor. So that was the first surgery I had, and I sat down with my surgeon, and obviously I knew I was going to have to do chemotherapy and radiotherapy. Like, that's just the traditional way of treating cancer. And the first thing I actually asked, because I had a 3 month old, like in my brain, that was all I was thinking about, obviously. The first thing I asked him was, what do I do? Like, when do I freeze my eggs? And he's like, what? You've got a baby in your arms and you're thinking about freezing your eggs. I'm like, yeah, well, how is she going to have siblings? When do I freeze my eggs? And he's like, you don't have time. You don't have 14 days
Shit.
To go through that process to freeze your eggs. You don't have time. Like, do you want to have the possibility of giving her a biological full sibling, or do you want Survive. To be her mum? Yeah.
Fuck.
So obviously everyone around me was like, well, you're going to be her mum. And I'm like, oh yeah, sibling. That sounds like that's the good option. Like, do the 14 days, I'll give her a sibling. And they're like, you are delusional, woman. You're not doing this.
You'd just be in so much shock. You'd just be like, but I feel like this young, healthy mum. Yeah, I've had a bunch of weird bowel things, but like, you wouldn't be acknowledging or understanding how serious these words are when the doctor's telling you, like, you literally are, if you don't operate on right now, like, you could die imminently.
Yeah, yeah. And like, obviously, yes, I don't take my life for granted and I want to live a very long life. But in that moment, all I could think about was Sophia's future. Because like,
yeah,
I've still got stage 4 cancer. Like, I could still die tomorrow. Like, obviously I'm not going to, but I could. So why couldn't I then give her a sibling that's going to be around for a lot longer? Like, that, I guess, was my thought process, which is probably pretty selfless of me. But in the moment, everyone was like, what are you thinking, girl?
Selfless, but also keep self alive first, siblings later.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, which I have come to terms with slowly, but like, at the same time, it's so much mum guilt knowing that she doesn't have a sibling.
But there's so many other ways that you can get her a sibling. So you're here, though. That's the most important part. So this is what you've had everything removed, the tumor and everything removed. And how long after did you do all the chemo and radiation? And did they kind of give you the all clear at any point?
So I actually started chemo and radiotherapy first because of the extent of the tumor. Like, if they removed that, they would have removed a hell of a lot more than what they ended up having to. So I did the 6 months or whatever it was, 5 to 6 months of chemo and radio starting on my 26th birthday. Happy birthday.
Oh.
And then had then had my bowel. So like ultra low interior resection, which is essentially my entire rectum, which is the muscle that helps you go to the toilet, and some of my bowel removed. So my sigmoid colon and my bowel removed and kind of reattached straight to the anus, which is kind of weird in hindsight, but like, at the same time, like, it's my reality. Like, that's the system I'm working with, which is fine. 3 months after that, I had a reversal, so I had my stoma taken off and had to relearn how to go to the toilet like a toddler, learning the sensations of needing to go to the toilet. I would also wear a nappy and learn the sensations to need to go to the toilet.
Wow.
And then I was no evidence of disease, which is they couldn't see anything in a scan, which was obviously like the best case scenario. They would never put me in remission because of the amount of lymph nodes that had disease in it when they removed it. But yeah, I was essentially living again, which lasted 5 months before I relapsed.
Oh, Kelly, I am so sorry that this has been your story. That's just too much to happen to a young, like, amazing mum that was otherwise living the dream and healthy. Mm-hmm. And like, your partner, how was he with all this? I imagine it would have been the heaviest load for him to carry while you're doing chemo while Sophia is so young.
Yeah, well, he has a pretty intense job as it is, I guess. He's an elite athlete. That's his job. So he had to channel all the fear, anger, resentment, whatever he was feeling into his game, because without his job, we weren't making an income, because I was now essentially being full-time cared for by my own mum, who also had to care for my three-month-old daughter. So, like, we had so much going on that if he didn't perform, essentially you don't play, you don't get paid. So
totally.
He didn't have any other option than to just get on with it.
Heavy.
But, like, at the same time, like, it is a big kick in the ass when you're running around on the football field being like, I'm so tired, being like, your wife's quite literally dying in bed. You're not tired. Get on with it, sort of thing. So, like, yeah. He had the best season he's ever had the last 2 years. So I guess I've helped him.
Well, he would have, like you said, channeled everything he's got into that. Like, he would have been so fierce out there. And then, do you guys have really dark moments where you just crumble? Like, can you talk us through what those moments are like?
I haven't had many. The only time that I guess he and I saw his and Sophia's lives without me in it was when I relapsed for the first time, because the extent of the disease was pretty severe. Like, it was all through my lungs, my abdomen, my pelvis. Like, it was just everywhere. Like, I don't know how to explain it any other way. But he hadn't been to any of my oncology appointments, which is like the chemotherapy doctor, for people that don't know what oncology is.
Yeah.
So he hadn't been to them appointments because I was so used to going alone, which is fine because obviously I had to do these things alone sometimes because someone had to look after the baby, someone had to work. Like, it was a lot of logistical chaos, really. But he didn't know the steps of, like, so if the disease was just in my lung, it was a resection. If it was in the lymph nodes surrounding, it was chemotherapy and a resection. But if it was anywhere outside of those lymph nodes, then it was palliative care, which obviously is not ideal. I was 27 at the time. Yeah, 27 at the time. So he didn't know these options. And when the lung doctor, who I'd met for 2 minutes, turned his screen around to show me my scan that I'd had a couple of weeks prior, I was like, oh, don't even worry about speaking about it. Like, I know exactly what that means. Got up and left. I was the most expensive 2 minutes of my life, mind you.
Stop.
And Jeremy's like, why are you being so mean to him? Like, he didn't do anything. I'm like, oh. And then I had to then, as a 27-year-old, tell my husband that essentially my option from that oncologist before finding a new one was palliative care, which means get comfortable, take some morphine and die happy.
Oh, my gosh. How old was Sophia at this age?
She was one.
I've got goosebumps.
And what did you guys do?
Sophia was at one of my best friend's house at the time being looked after so that Jeremy could come to this appointment with me, because obviously it was a pretty life-changing appointment. He went inside to pick her up, didn't come out for 2 hours. So he spent those 2 hours obviously coming to terms with what our reality was. And within that 2 hours, I'd found a new oncologist. So, like, I guess I'm very proactive and I'm, like, doing all the things to make sure that I'm still here, whereas everyone around me is feeling copping all the emotions and feeling all the things, like, in the moment, whereas I'm just like, nah, what's next, what's next, what's next? So I've never really had those really dark days. I've had a couple, like, I'm human, but, like, I haven't been like, my life would be easier not being here. I've never had those, but I know people around me have. So it is hard, but it's like, if I don't just get on with it, then...
Well, you don't have a choice.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're an absolute weapon.
I fully understand what you mean as well. Like, when you're just like, you know, if I'm just going to sit here and twiddle my fingers, I can get in this deep, dark, dark, dark hole, or I just have to keep going and finding more and more doctors. You are so, like, your positivity is just literally incredible. Do they say that it's terminal at that point when it's all through your body, or no?
Yeah. So I was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, is terminal cancer. I was diagnosed with that the day that I was diagnosed. So I've been living for 2.5 years since being terminally ill, which people don't actually be able to grasp that, because I don't look unwell. Like, if you look at me, I look so well. I do all the things. I'm still working as hard as I possibly can while raising a daughter as well as I possibly can and doing all the things that normal people do, but I'm also fighting for my life every day. But you don't see that, because I'm really good at protecting others. And also, once it consumes your mind, you're a goner, I think. That's my personal opinion.
Yeah.
Obviously, like, there's no medical facts to that. I'm not a doctor. But once it consumes my mind, I'm certain that I'll be a goner.
I'm certain too. I think mindset is absolutely everything.
Like, it's the most powerful tool you can possibly have. But in terms of where I am right now, I, like, obviously, so that what I was just talking about with the relapse was over a year ago now. It was January last year. So I've done a whole nother round of chemo and radio and was stable again from July and then in December this year. So it happens to be around Christmas time every time that I feel unwell, of course. I felt, I guess, tightness in my chest, similar to what I had when I relapsed previously. So when I got a scan out of the blue and it had shown the tiniest bit of progression, but any progression is progression. So I went and started chemotherapy again, but have just recently quit, like it's a job, quit chemotherapy, and I am focusing on a more holistic healing approach, which I'm feeling really confident about.
Chloe and I were watching your stories this morning. You were talking about scanxiety, and I just think so many people, like, you know, in Chloe's case, you're going for a fertility scan or like health scans in general. And I think that would be, just be, you'd help so many by speaking up about how anxious people can get when they're like driving or going into the scans. How hard is that to sit there and be fed information that you just kind of don't know what you're going to get?
Yeah. So I always get my blood test beforehand, and I don't know if I do it to, I think it's like almost like a bit of a support. So like I do it a couple of days beforehand, so I know where my levels are at, so I kind of know what to expect from the scan. So my bloods are really stable, which then means the scan's probably going to be pretty similar to what it was last time. And as long as things are stable and not growing, then that's all we can really ask for. Like it's a lifetime thing that I'm going to live with forever now. I'm very confident that one day I will be in remission, but remission is only for so long. And then it's like, it's not if it comes back, it's when it comes back. So yeah, it's scanxiety is so real. It's so real. And I know it's so real for so many people, not just people in my situation. Like, you mentioned about Chloe going in for maternity scans. Like, they are the hardest you could possibly do, especially when you've experienced loss. And I've experienced loss. But knowing that the heartbeat's there 1 week and then it's not 6 weeks later, like, that's hard. But that's just, it's the same with anyone that's experiencing scans, not knowing, especially because you can't read that scan without, like, you're not the doctor. So you're quite literally just laying there and just giving in to all the emotions and just letting them do their thing.
Yeah, it really sucks.
And just like trying to read the doctor's face.
I think I've only just gotten comfortable with scans at this point in my pregnancy, even like, because obviously the baby's moving heaps now. So I'm kind of like, yeah, everything. And not that that means anything, but like, I'm like, yep, that I feel a little bit more confident. But far out, scans are the, like, I hate scans. Kelly, I want to, because I really want to create a little bit of awareness around bowel cancer in this episode, I want to go back to, like, can you describe what you're feeling prior the Portaloo chat and prior to seeing a doctor? Like, if anyone else, you know, just to, so people can understand what it is that you're at, because it's obviously, you thought it was sort of normal, but it obviously wasn't.
When I first saw the doctor for the colonoscopy, like 5 years ago now, whenever it was, I was your typical young 20-year-old that thought she was lactose intolerant, gluten intolerant, all of the intolerances, and would just kind of ride that wave and as to why I maybe had abdominal pains or infrequencies in like bowel movements. So like either being completely constipated or going to the toilet 10 times that day. Like, that was never a normal week for me. And obviously now that I know what's going on, I know that that's not right. But in the time and the day and age that we're in, it's on social media, it was like kind of cool to have an intolerance to something. Like, drinking almond milk was like,
everyone had it.
Like, drinking almond milk or getting the gluten-free pasta or whatever, which sucks. So why did we want it? But literally, like, doing those things was like cool. So I kind of just rode that wave and I was like, oh, I've got that too. Like, I'm not going to the toilet properly, so I must be intolerant. Or I've got abdominal pains, I've got my period coming on. Like, everything that I was experiencing was so easy to put down to something else. Like, abdominal pains, period pains, like in my weight fluctuation. So like losing a whole heap of weight 1 month and then just being normal or like gaining weight the next, like that's a symptom of bowel cancer. Having low iron is a symptom of bowel cancer, which we all experience in pregnancy. Like, there's so many things that I could put down to so many other, being a woman, symptoms.
Yeah.
Symptoms. It's obviously not ideal, but like it makes sense that it goes missed for so long and that you don't find it until you're 50 something can get sent in the bowel screening kit.
It totally makes so much sense. And we're hearing this in a lot of our episodes. We put out one recently, which was an endometriosis awareness one. And yeah, same thing, like just being a woman, oh, those pains are normal because period or like everything that you're saying, I think as women, we just put it down to, oh, that's just women being women. That's normal, blah, blah, blah. Or fucking stop eating gluten. It's probably that. And oh, it's so true. Like we go through so much and we just brush so much under the rug and then we kind of end up just suffering silently, I guess.
Yeah, but like in our own defense, every doctor that I saw when I was going through this would send me to a naturopath to get my gut fixed or, so you know what I mean? Like they would dismiss it as me just being intolerant or like trying to ride that trend. So like it wasn't until I was postpartum and I had a female doctor that had experienced bowel cancer in her life that she was like, holy hell, you have every symptom. Didn't tell me obviously until I'd had the colonoscopy. But after the colonoscopy, she's like, thank God you went through with that because everything was ringing like alarm bells, but blood in your stool is obviously a massive, like quite literally red flag. But for me, I was like, I'm bleeding out of every hole. What do you mean? Like I just had a baby.
Yeah, like that became normal for you.
I'm so shook that like when you're having these pregnancy scans that this was not shown in the scans because I'm like thinking you can see a lot. My doctor used to tell me all the time when I was going through IVF, and this is not this pregnancy, but he'd be like, oh, you haven't gone poo-poo today. Yeah. Like you've got your poo-poo in there. And I'm like,
literally.
Okay, cool. Thanks for pointing it out. Like what, how? I'm like shook that they haven't picked this up. But
yeah, but at the same time, Chloe, there was also things that were always missed in your scans too, like, you know.
In doctors' defences, it must be difficult as well because, like we say, there's so much stuff under these umbrellas and, you know, realistically, unless you do specialise in this field, there's so much to know, like how are you meant to know. But I wanted to ask you, Kelly, is bowel cancer common, like potentially was it missed because bowel cancer is not so common for someone who's 22 years old?
That is right. Like it is, all cancers are particularly old people diseases. Like that's what I guess you hear about. But at the same time, like bowel cancer is a leading death by cancer for my age group from 25 to 34 year old. So like it is so prevalent in our age group in terms of dying from cancer, but it was still just passed off as nothing.
It's one of those cancers that's picked up later, isn't it?
Yeah, you get given a screening when you turn 55, 50. I've completely forgotten.
That seems so late.
But that's when you would get cancer. Like that's when your polyps would develop into something more cancerous or like, yeah, it's hard because like you want the funding to be there for younger people and for it to be picked up earlier. But at the same time, like if 3,000 people do it, there might be one person that finds something early. And it's like, can they justify spending all that money on these tests if it's only, do you know what I mean? Like the statistics aren't there.
It's a hard one.
If you feel something in your gut is wrong with your gut or bowel or, you know, are you allowed to go to the can you go to the doctor and just demand a colonoscopy? Is that something you can do? Or
you can ask for a screening, which is essentially just like a little paintbrush that you brush in the water after going to the toilet, and then they test it to see microscopic blood in your poo. And then if there's any discrepancies, then they will send you for a colonoscopy. But it is really hard to advocate for yourself to get a colonoscopy because if they don't find anything, they've just wasted this specialist's time essentially, which sucks because that's quite literally what their job is to find things, but hopefully not. But yeah.
Oh, far out. So now you've banded together with two other girls who have actually got the same surgeon, was it?
Surgeon,
And you three have started a podcast together. Can you talk to us about that? And so good that you girls have found each other and can do this.
Yeah, well, it's very relevantly named Shit Talkers because we, you know, we met through shit, we've grown through shit, we've bonded
through
shit.
That's awesome.
So it's not all to do with obviously bowels and whatnot. Like there's lots of shit in our lives that isn't to do with our diseases, which is I think the message that we're trying to get across. Because like, yes, while I have the platform that I'm able to advocate and raise awareness for this shitty disease, I also am a person outside of the disease and it is quite literally like 2% of my life. So I guess that we use that to address different questions and like break down stereotypes or like remove stigmas, because poo isn't sexy and women want to be sexy. Like we all strive to be sexy in some way, whether you can admit it or not. Talking about shit is not sexy, but it's so important.
So important. It's something we do every day in our bowel movements. Like we talk about them all the time, Chloe and I, like we talk about it, our poos and what they were like. And
serious shit talk. Yeah, on this holiday, I tell you what.
All friends talk about poo. If you're close, I think you do talk about poo. We chat about it with Paul and Richie, the boys. Yeah. Like we don't give a fuck. But and it is important. Like
it is.
But it's a normal, you know, bodily thing. So why are we not talking about it more? Yeah. And I love that. Yeah, so it's called shit talk. Yeah. Everyone needs to go and listen to shit talk.
The idea is that we didn't have anything when we were diagnosed. Like we didn't have anyone. There was no one on Instagram. I couldn't find anyone that had been through the same thing. So I guess I'm trying to make a domino effect of people sharing more. So then when you are unfortunately, obviously diagnosed, there's someone that you can not just relate to, but get a little bit of hope from that they've gone through it and they're okay. Or whether you need to ask a question about like, how do you overcome having a bag of shit on your stomach? Like being able to talk about that openly helps so many people that have now just got a stoma and like, just random little things like that I had no one to ask. I had no one to talk to about it. And like, I wish there was something out there. And obviously I've only been diagnosed 2.5 years ago. So I've only been speaking about it for not very long, but there's still so many people that message me every single day being like, thank God you exist. Oh, because without you, I wouldn't know any of this. Mm-hmm.
Did you talk publicly or did you kind of, did you post photos when you had your stoma bag?
Yeah. It's literally just like, a piece of fabric, to be fair. Like it's so, it's not offensive in any way, but like when you're living with it, you think that you stink. You don't. It's like more sanitized than going to the toilet.
I bet it is. Yeah.
Like, do you know what I mean? Like it's so fine, but yeah.
I bet that must've been a very confronting thing to know that you're about to do being a really young, beautiful girl and yeah, fuck power to you on that. How long did you have your stoma for?
Only 9 months.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I got rid of it as soon as I possibly could.
Did you know that you were always going to reverse that and not have it forever, or did you think that you were going to have that forever?
Well, it's never guaranteed that the joints will like be strong enough to be able to reverse it. But I was really lucky that within like 4 or 5 weeks, it was strong enough. So 3 months later, I was able to reverse it, which was really good. But like learning how to poo again, let me tell you.
Oh,
I don't want anyone to have to go through
that. Tell us about it.
It's like, okay, so you know how like you get the urgency, this is the only way I can explain it, to like fart?
Yeah.
And you know, you can tell the difference between needing to fart or needing to shit. Like you're not going to shit yourself.
But never trust a fart, hey?
I can't trust a fart. Like if I need a fart, I run. I'm like, I need to go to the toilet. Yeah. Or like the first 6 weeks, the only way I knew I had to go to the toilet was I had like this insane pain in my gut because it was obviously like backed up because I don't have the muscle to even push it out. So it just has to like slide out, which is like, that's still my reality now. But the sensation of farting for me has never been something that I've craved, but
it does feel good. It does feel good.
It's like a sneeze. It's like,
wow.
You get all this build up and then you're like, well, I can't even let it out because what if it's a shit? So I have to run to the toilet and then I'm like, I might do a fart on the toilet. I'm like, damn.
You're like, damn, that was just a fart. You know how we do our pelvic floor exercises? Is there like anal floor exercises that you do?
I don't have the muscle, like it's gone. The rectum is gone. I'm literally bowed to anus, yeah.
Fuck, man.
Straight ejection, straight out.
I think there'd be so many young women and men out there that have a stoma bag that, yeah, maybe they're not telling their friends about or they're hiding or, you know, they feel embarrassed about.
And it's really easy to hide it as well. Like it's really easy because it's below your belly button. Like if you wear a high-waisted pant or even like just like a tie or something, you cannot see it. You can't.
I wanted to chat to you and like we speak about this often as well on the podcast here. I wanted to chat to you about people online and on social media because – like we've just said before, you literally look like a normal, healthy, young 28-year-old woman, and you speak about all this stuff so openly. Do you find people come up to you in public or at parties and all this sort of stuff and want you to then, like, we're here to create a voice for those people who don't want to speak, but do you find it difficult when people come up to you in public and want to talk about their aunt or their uncle or their grandmother who passed away at 95 years old of cancer? Do you find that difficult?
It is really hard to turn off, I guess. I feel like I'm always on. So obviously, yes, I'm very much in the public eye for this reason. And I know that people know that I have, I guess, a lot of awareness around it. And I'm pretty good at talking someone down in terms of, like, if they're going through a really hard time, I'm like, it'll be okay sort of thing. And I'll give them every reason as to why it will be okay. But when I'm at a wedding, for example, or I don't know, that's probably just my first example to come off my head. Like, I don't need to be trauma dumped on. I'm there to celebrate love. I'm not there to talk about cancer. Like, you can see me walking through the street. I look like a normal person. So treat me that way. Like, I know that I do have this disease, but like I said earlier, it's 2% of my life. Like, yes, I do have to relate a lot of my life around it because I have to be in certain places for doctor's appointments or whatever. But I am really conscious in making it not who I am, just a part of who I am. So when people trauma dump or like tell me that their aunt has stage 5 cancer, which isn't even a thing, I'm like, honey, wrong person, wrong time, wrong place. I'm so empathetic and I'm like, I'm so sorry that you've ever been touched by cancer. Like, if you have ever been touched by cancer, you know it's horrific. And I'm so glad I'm the one going through it and not a friend, because I could not watch one of my closest friends go through what I've just gone through. But I don't need to hear about it when I'm at a wedding celebrating love. Mm. When I'm speaking in front of a room advocating, absolutely come up and tell me about it after. But when I'm quite literally at an event to celebrate something completely irrelevant to me, I'm not even there to celebrate me. I'm there to celebrate a friend. Then that's what we should be doing. And that's where the focus should be.
Oh, it's always when you're trying to like escape reality, or like I find I'm having a few drinks and I'm just like trying to live my life and someone's like saying some hectic like story about how their best friend passed away or their best friend's partner passed away. And I'm like, oh, now I'm fucking crying on the floor with this person. And
you're like, yeah, same.
Yeah.
Same, but like, I wasn't thinking about that 2 minutes ago.
But that's the beauty of how many people you touch and how many people want to come and chat to you. But yeah, it's such, again, that double-edged sword.
Yeah. And like, don't get me wrong, I love being the voice for the people that don't have one. Mm-hmm. And I love being able to talk about it while I'm still alive and living it, because I am I'm living proof that you can get through it, but also that you can get it at a really young age. So I love that I'm able to do that. But sometimes I'm just like, damn, I clocked off this week and I even left my bloody kid at home. Why are we talking about this?
Yeah. I know, it's so hard.
This is I honestly like feel like I'm gonna freaking cry, but I want to know, you've got the most beautiful little girl ever. I'm so freaking happy you have her, and you obviously have an amazing partner too. How do you guys communicate with her your prognosis and, you know, your cancer date? Is it a day-to-day conversation? Like, she's obviously at the age where she can kind of listen and understand things. How does that go down?
Yeah. So she is obviously only 2.5, so she doesn't understand the entirety of what cancer is, but she does understand that I have she calls it an owies. So whenever I'm in treatment, I'm pretty rat shit. Like, I'm not a mum that she wants to be around. So I've got a port, you can't really see it. So that's how, and I'm really self-conscious of it. So like, you can barely even see it. But anyway, whenever that's hooked up to a needle, she's like, oh, mummy not well this week. So like, she knows, she's really bloody clever. Like,
they're so smart. They know so much. She'd be taking this all.
Oh, it's crazy. She's the most resilient kid. Like, she has had that many mums, essentially. Like, I know, Elodie, you've got girls around you all the time. Like, they are all essentially her mum. Like, they all help just as much as you do. Like, and you know that.
The village, hey.
Like, we're so grateful to have that. Like, a village is so important, and even more so when you've got something that you're going through.
So lucky.
Even at 1 year old, like, she knew how she knew how much I wanted to give her a sibling. Like, I'd tell her all the time, like, I'll do it one day sort of thing. And she would, like, bring her baby and she's like, it's okay, mummy, I've got Charlotte or whatever. Like, I'm like, oh, you're just so smart. Oh,
that's freaking cute.
Yeah.
And I guess as she gets older, you'll be super honest with her and open about, yeah, what's going on with your health. Far out, doll.
Yeah. Well, you have to be. It has to be an open and honest conversation, because if she doesn't know, then it's almost like you're hiding a pretty dark reality from her, because she needs to know what's going on. Imagine one day I just, like, out of nowhere drop dead. Like, she'd be like, oh, what happened to mommy? It's like, at least if she's, like, got the process coming.
100%.
You know what I mean? So, like, even if I go to the doctor now, she'd be like, no, not this week. The other week, actually, it was so bloody sad. I dropped her at daycare, and normally when I say I'm going to the doctor, it's to get my chemo put up. And she's like, no, mummy, not owies this week. And I'm like, oh, baby, I'm not going to get owies this week. I promise you, I'm going to see a different doctor. I'm like, God, I need to start naming them. This kid's, like, traumatized.
Oh, my God. She's like, I just want my mummy back this week. I want a non-owie week. Yeah. Oh, that fucking breaks my heart.
I know. The daycare supervisor was like, how do you deal with that? I'm like, I'm just going to walk away. Bye. So sad. Poor girl.
We're so glad that you have such a good mindset and such a, like, seemingly beautiful village around you helping you. Wow.
Yeah. No, I'm very lucky. Like, I definitely lean on, and it took me a really long time to, like, come to terms with the fact that I'd have to lean on so many people. Like, it did. Because, like, I had this picture in my mind of what motherhood was going to be like, and to tell you what, it has not been like that. So, yeah, it took me a really long time to lean on them and accept help.
Yeah. It's a really hard thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
You're obviously living your life still, which is so amazing, and I follow you on Instagram, and I, like I said, we're not friends, but we are friends because we do chat about random shit sometimes. Yeah. But I'm like, you've just recently unhooked yourself basically to go to Taylor Swift and go to Pink, and you're like living these incredible experiences.
Yes.
How much does that rock you after? Yeah. Do you feel, are you weak at the moment?
Yeah. So I'm immunocompromised, which means I'm like pretty average. Like, I have only just started fighting off colds again, which is good. Obviously, it sucks fighting off a cold, but like at least my body's doing what it's meant to do. But after Taylor in particular, I literally unplugged the day before. So I was normally Fridays off a chemo week, I'd be in bed for the whole day. Like, you're lucky to see me out of the bedroom sort of thing. But I was flying out at 6 a.m. that day. Like, there's things you have to do for yourself. Yeah. And the amount of backlash I copped from people being like, how are you at a concert if you can't even look after your own child? And I'm like, believe it or not, I am still a human that gets to have, like, experiences that other mums were there without their kids too. Like, just because I'm sick, like, why does it, what's the difference?
And when you have a doctor that has previously said to you, like, you have X amount of time to live, you're like, I fucking love Taylor Swift and I want to go see her. Like, this is a bucket list thing as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, it rocked me. I was like, so an adrenaline come down is hard enough, but like I had a chemo and adrenaline come down while also coming down off of a flight. And like, it was a rocky few days, but I still parented. Like, I was still home. Like, I didn't have daycare those days because it's a weekend. Like, I still had to do the things, but yeah, I copped it a hell of a lot more than I expected I would. Like, I understand if I was, I don't know, off living my best life for a week, but I quite literally went away less than 24 hours. And
that's insane.
Like, the worst mum in the world. I'm like, I already had mum guilt. Yeah, I don't need it from you too.
Fuck that. Oh man, you are shining through. Like, what I can't even imagine is so, dull. You're doing freaking amazingly.
It's not easy, but I feel like it's easier than it could be. Like, I could be in a really dark place mentally, and then that would, I probably wouldn't be here anymore. I actually asked my surgeon the other day, because I was writing down a form and had prognosis. Mm. I was like, I don't even know what that is, which is like pretty bad considering I'm going through cancer and that's my thing. Anyway, I rang him and I was like, what's my prognosis? He's like, I was like, did you ever give me one? And he's like, no, you've already outlived it by 18 months. I'm like, fuck yeah, I have. What do I write then?
Yes, yes, girl.
And he's like, just write NA. I'm like, okay.
NA.
Not applicable. Don't have one. So funny. He's like, yeah, I never gave you that because I didn't want you to like live by it. And I'm like, that's so true, because if you gave me 9 months on a piece of paper, you best believe I would have being clocked at those 9 months. But because I never got given any timeline, I was just living day by day. Like, I'm still here, doing pretty well. Like, I'm not a survivor as per se. Yeah, I'm still living with the disease, but I'm thriving.
Oh, I thought they kind of had to. Well, were you not asking for a time on purpose?
Yeah, I didn't. He kind of took me under like his daughter. Oh. Like, he quite literally missed his daughter's 18th birthday to come and make sure I was okay in the hospital. Like, he is a beautiful human being, but he protected me in the ways that I didn't need the information, but also gave me everything else really directly. So, like, as much as it was all like a big hit in my face, he never gave me the things that he didn't believe to be true. So, like, a prognosis. If it said 9 months, he's like, there's no chance. She's gone in 9 months, so why would I give her that?
That's so true.
Kelly, you must be so proud of yourself. I am bloody proud of you. I think, like, what you've accomplished and what you've overcome and, like, what you're still doing is so unbelievably incredible. And I, you know, just when you think that you've got it tough, that, like, you just don't know what the next person's going through. And I just, you are such an inspiration, I think, to so, so, so many women. And I'm really grateful that we've, like, somehow crossed paths and we're connected in, like, some weird little way. But I am really, really, and I can probably, and I can speak on behalf of L2, like, so grateful that you've come on our podcast and you've given us this time. And I think you will have helped so many of our listeners. And it's all about spreading that awareness. And that's what we're here to do as well. And yeah. Thank you so much, honestly.
We've all got trauma. It's just how we deal with it. It's not the trauma we've thrown at us. It's how we go through it. And I think that's probably what I want to get across the most. Like, yeah, obviously bowel cancer awareness is really important, but once you've got the diagnosis, you've got it. So it's how you deal with it.
We always say we like to turn our pain into power, and that's exactly what you're doing.
That's the one. Trying my best anyway.
Thanks so much, Kelly.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Well, we're definitely going to meet you later on in the year for sure. We're going to do a little trip to Adelaide.
Yes. We are doing an Adelaide trip, guys, in November.
Oh, you're coming here. Are you doing something?
No, we are. Yes, dolls, we are. It's a bit of a secret at the moment, but we're throwing out a hint. November, darling Sean, Adelaide. Boom.
You heard it here first, guys.
Can't wait.
Yay. Well, thanks so much, Kelly. We love you and cannot wait to meet you in person.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Bye, love.